Shope.
Hey, put a little bit. I never get this line out the first time. It's not even good. Hey, put a little bit more in there, cowboy.
And the bulldog.
What's your degree in?
Kicking ass and taking names.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
George Wendt has died. Reports. I suppose his role in Fletch would not be the first mentioned in his obituary. It'd be Norm. Cheers.
I think that's yeah.
Fat Sam. Yeah. Fletch has lost two legends in a week. Joe Don Baker and George Wendt.
Oh, I didn't know the Whammer had ties to Fletch.
He's the mean cop. He kind of always was a mean somebody. Joe Don Baker in all his movies.
Yeah.
He had an edge to him. Also a man who has an edge to him, Warren Sharp, joining us now on the West Her Hotline, sharpfootballanalysis.com, one of the best in the business. Warren, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. So let's start with the schedule. I know you put a lot of time in trying to find disparities in team schedule and, you know, give a deeper insight into who really has weaker versus stronger schedules. How did the Bills come out here for you? I think I've seen a lot. They're on the weaker side of things. Maybe you can add to that with what you've researched.
Yeah, so if we were talking about just who they play, the Bills have the fifth easiest schedule in the NFL because they're playing some weaker divisions. I love the tentpole nature of the way that their games are spread out, the way that the schedule makers gave them three home games against the three toughest teams. Now, they didn't give them the home games. Those were already there, but they have the Ravens to start the season, the Eagles to end the season, the Chiefs smack dab right there in the middle of the season, as long as they don't blow a look-ahead spot off of a bye in Carolina against the Panthers week 8, sets them up nicely against the Kansas City Chiefs in week 9. From a rest perspective, though, the Buffalo Bills do have some challenges from week 10 through 18. So immediately following the Bills, they play four games at a rest disadvantage and just one game at a rest advantage. And last year they went 11-2 when they had at or even rest compared to their opponent, but they were just 3-3 when they had less rest than their opponent. The Bills will play four of those games down the stretch of this season. It's the third worst rest differential to close out the season of any team in the NFL. I don't love the rest spots for them. The good news is the game after the bye week is the Carolina Panthers. I just told you about that one. That's a key one. You can't look ahead to the Chiefs. That's going to be a big thing. And many teams have struggled coming off of byes since that 2011 CBA. It used to be a great thing to have a bye because you could keep the players in town sometimes. You didn't have to give them the mandatory time off, but now they do. And the data certainly shows that teams are playing worse off of a bye. You know who the best team in the NFL is off of a bye?
It's been
the Buffalo Bills are 10-0 off of a bye. You guys are 10-0 off of a bye the last 10 years. You are the best team off of a bye in the NFL. Most teams have fallen back. You guys are surging ahead, whether you're talking against the spread where you're covering 75% or just outright winning these games. You're doing a tremendous job there as well.
Andy Reid is, I almost spat that out before your answer. Good thing nobody heard me, because he has kind of the reputation here.
Definitely don't bring it up now.
Yeah.
No. So, Warren, if I may follow up, I'd like to hear you talk about, like, what is the extent of the advantage? Like, what does the data show I'm gaining or losing in these spots where I'm playing somebody, you know, that's had more rest? And I think, I know what you would say, I've read it from you, I agree with you, that the league should do a better job than it does at this. I mean, we know what their overall purpose is with the schedule, you know, eyeballs. But we both think they should do a better job at this. But there's only so far it can go. I think you'd agree. One of those Bills losses last year is the AFC Championship game, where Kansas City plays on early Saturday and they don't travel, and the Bills play Sunday night and do. So I think we'd all have to acknowledge that there are limits to what can be, you know, made better.
Yes, absolutely. Look, the NFL, by nature, is the least equitable sport that exists for a regular season schedule based upon who you play, because they're never going to balance it with the way that they have divisions and the way that they have other divisions that they rotate, and that's predetermined years in advance. The teams with the easiest schedule and the hardest schedule are much wider apart in the NFL than they are in baseball, where there's, 162 games, or basketball, where there's 82 games. There's so much more opportunity for those teams to have a more even schedule. So we know football, just based upon who you're going to play, before the schedule makers even get involved, is going to be less equitable. The goal, in my opinion at least, should be to try to ensure that that equity doesn't cross this imaginary line as they're trying to increase the revenue. But who's policing that? It's the league internally saying, this is, we're aware of that. It's not our primary focus. We're just trying to make sure that nobody's too out of bounds here with these equalities. Well, then you look at a team like the Cincinnati Bengals, who are playing in Baltimore on a Thursday night game for three straight years. Baltimore has played once on Thursday night in Cincinnati in the last 20 years. And why are they, Cincinnati, being forced to play in Baltimore three straight years? Why is the only, I know this doesn't involve Buffalo, but why is Dallas the only team this year that's playing three games in a 10-day span? You know, the NFL didn't have any teams playing three games in 10 days for years. Then they introduced it last year with the game on Christmas on a Wednesday, and all of a sudden now they still have it in the schedule this year. Nobody should have to play that. Why should one team have to play that? So, you know, if you're looking up and down the schedule, there are things that are inequitable that could be improved upon. Now, to your first question, what is the extent of the damage? What's the collateral damage here? Which are the worst spots that we should be focusing in on? Well, teams off of a short week road game. The reason I look at point spreads a lot of the time here is because point spreads should be the equalizer, right? Win-loss record is going to vary, but the point spread is supposed to try to generally get teams to hit right around 50% if the odds makers and the bettors are accurate with a very efficient market here. Teams on a short week road game, that means they're playing on a Sunday, now they have to go on the road on a Thursday, for instance. That's one time. Mm-hmm. Those teams have covered the spread at just a 48.3% clip. You might say that that's over the last decade. You might say that's close to a coin flip. That's okay. That's minus 7.8% ROI. If you're thinking about like your investment portfolios, 7.8% losing that is a pretty bad thing to be losing. And that's what happens when you're betting on teams that are playing a short week road game. Teams that play the following week after playing on the road on a Sunday or Monday night game, those teams are only covering the spread less than 49% of the time. Teams in the three games in 10 days, those teams are playing terribly. And why should you have – so those are spots that you should look out for, but the NFL doesn't really care too much about balancing those spots. So as a sports bettor, you could look to take advantage of those from a betting perspective. But from an equity standpoint, you should try to balance that out a little bit more. Why does, for example, I'll give you the most extreme example. Mm-hmm. Why do the Detroit Lions play eight games where they have a rest advantage, only one where they have a rest disadvantage, versus the Las Vegas Raiders play six games at a rest disadvantage, only one game with a rest advantage? No team in NFL history has played eight games with a rest advantage, but that's what the Lions get to play this year. No team in NFL history has played five teams coming off of a Monday night game on short weeks, but that's what the Detroit Lions get to play this year, as they face five such opponents. And as you guys know, it's very different if you're coming off Detroit. If you're Detroit playing a 1 p.m. game, you have all afternoon on Sunday to rest up all night, study the film, rest up, rehab all day Monday, and then watch the team that you're about to play play Monday night, get home to their houses on Tuesday morning, and be behind in catch-up. And they get to do that, play five games like that this year. So the NFL needs to do a little bit better job of trying to balance some of these things out, in my opinion.
Warren, one of the portions of the Bills schedule that concerns me the most, I like the schedule a lot. No Europe, no holiday stuff. So, you know, they got their allotment of primetime games, but they are playing, you got to it, talking about week 10, but even pulling back from there by a few weeks, beginning with week 6 in Atlanta, they play 7 of 10 on the road, 4 out of 5 in one pocket in the middle of that, and there's in the middle of within that then is a Thursday on the road in Houston off of, at least they're at home the week before, but how much does travel enter into the rest point you're making?
So travel, I do believe that teams have improved with the way that they travel, with their sports medicine and the way that they rehab, such that it makes travel not as big of a deficit, and something we looked out for a little bit more earlier on, not as much so now. Some teams prefer to have back-to-back games at times on the road, especially if they're like a West Coast team going east, and they'll just stay over, and they feel like that knocks out some of those games. It reduces their overall travel, and then they get to play more home games stacked up at other points in the season. So it sort of really depends. You know, you're right. The Bills do have an interesting quirk where they're playing on the road in Atlanta, then a bye week, then on the road in Carolina. So they bookend their bye with a couple of road games. They do have back-to-back road games there where they're on Thursday Night Football in Houston, which is definitely a disadvantage. Playing that short week road game is a tricky spot for them after hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So, you know, the other thing that they don't get the advantage of is playing or hosting any cold weather teams late in the season. You know, the teams that they're hosting late in the season are the Philadelphia Eagles, the New York Jets, and the Cincinnati Bengals. Those are the only home games that they play week 12 onward. Those three teams are obviously acclimated to playing in cold weather. So they're not gaining anything from that either.
Warren Sharp is our guest on WGR, Mike Shope and the Bulldog here. So the Bills have about, I mean, depending on what you like, division odds, win the conference championship, win the Super Bowl. The Bills, again, are at the top of the list. I think their odds of winning their division are the shortest of anybody. And, you know, of course, that's a reflection of what people think the rest of the AFC East will look like. What is your read on that? I think it's easy here to get comfortable. Miami has just not been able to take them down. New England and the Jets are closer to rebuilding teams. Is that how you see it, or is there maybe a trap here?
I don't think there's a trap from a division perspective. I think the Bills are as positioned, as you mentioned, the odds reflect this, as any team in the NFL at capturing their division crown. The key for the Bills, in my opinion, we know how important trying to host games in Buffalo is. It's not the end-all, be-all when it comes to, you know, going to the Super Bowl, but you definitely want to try to get that first-round bye, especially when you have an early bye in Week 7. And so, like, I'm not betting Bills minus 230 to win the AFC East, but I absolutely believe that the Buffalo Bills are going to win the AFC East. I think Justin Fields is not going to, like, elevate the New York Jets that much in 2025. I love what the Patriots did in the draft, and I think that they're on their way, but I don't know that year one with Mike Vrabel, they take that massive step to actually dethrone the Buffalo Bills. And then I think the Miami Dolphins are a team that's searching for answers and don't really have very many. So I think they're very much so up in the air. So I think the Buffalo Bills, what their biggest focus needs to be, if I'm being completely transparent, and if I was there helping strategize a game plan every week, it is we need to figure out a way to get up on these teams that are worse than us. Most of the games that they're going to be playing are teams that are worse than them. Get up on these teams quickly in games, have leads early, build on those leads so that we can potentially rest some of our guys in that fourth quarter and not play in a lot of these one score games, because we have an early Week 7 bye, and we need to make sure that we have a bye the first week of the playoffs and can have home field advantage. So their goals, obviously their big picture goal, is to get that number one seed in the AFC. But in order to do that, it's think smaller, build leads in games, rest your guys because we have an early bye. In case something goes sideways and we don't get that bye first week of the playoffs, we have the opportunity to still have a healthy roster, because we know that you guys, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, have had your fair share of too many injuries, and you guys need to stay as healthy as possible. And the only way to ensure it, you can't ensure it, but the way to reduce it is to reduce the total number of snaps that your starters have to play.
But that really came home to roost year before last when the Bills had to go right down to the wire the Sunday night game. They needed to win. They started that day not knowing if they were even going to be in the playoffs. It turned out win, and they won the division. But they had to go hard there and then play a wild card game. And the injuries they suffered in that Week 18 win in Miami, coupled with the injuries they suffered in the Pittsburgh wild card win, all but just crushed them for, I mean, they pulled A.J. Klein out of an RV driving his family to a vacation to come play linebacker, and he's chasing Travis Kelce around the field in a divisional round game. I mean, it was tough. The rest is so key.
I'll just say this. NFL teams, they're so focused on their goal each week is to be up when the clock hits zero after 60 minutes are done. They need to focus more on trying to be up by 10 points at the start of the fourth quarter. Yeah. They need to set goals to allow themselves to manage their team down the stretch of the fourth quarter to stay as healthy as possible and notch as many victories along the way as possible. Because, as you guys know, you get a tipped pass interception. Things can go sideways late in these games if you allow them to stay close. Your schedule, you are very fortunate this year. You play the fifth easiest schedule in the NFL. You play the number one easiest schedule of games at home in Buffalo of any team that plays at home. You're favored in every single game because you have the good fortune of hosting all of the most difficult games that you play. Baltimore, Kansas City, Philadelphia, and Cincinnati. Those are the toughest opponents you play. You play all of them at home. You're very fortunate the way that this schedule has fallen. It doesn't fall this way every single year. You've got to take advantage of it every single week by not letting any of these games look ahead or late game variance slip through the cracks, and you got to notch those wins.
Warren, I believe I've seen you tweet how you think the proposal to change the playoff seeding, or whatever it's actually technically should be called, will pass. I've seen today odds against it. I wonder if maybe you still have that position on it. And how do you feel about it? I get the logic behind, you know, dropping down a four seed, a weak division winner by record, but I also don't need it. I kind of like how it is now. And those games are interesting to try to analyze, where you have 11-6 at 9-8 or something like that. What do you see happening, and what should happen?
Yeah, I have changed my position a little bit based on some of the things that I've been hearing out of the teams that are in those AFC South divisions, where they generally are going to sit at the fourth seed. But what I was sort of basing my opinion on is the way that the NFL has been doing their schedule. It's crystal clear that their number one priority is bringing in more revenue. They want to sell those standalone games on pay-per-view scale. They want to be able to sell media packages in the future. And they're trying to break every record possible, and they want Week 18 to be must-see TV. They want their conference championship games to pit the two best teams if possible. And the way to most ensure that is to utilize the tactics in this new proposal to make those Week 18 games matter more. There was a slide that was showed at the league meeting, which went through the Houston Texans and the Los Angeles Rams specifically, mm-hmm. how they were sort of locked into their positions last year, so they rested their starters and they lost those games. But if the way that they want to propose had been used last year, the Houston Texans, instead of being locked into the fourth seed, could have fallen all the way to the seventh seed or been fifth or sixth. And same thing with the Los Angeles Rams, who knew that they were either going to be third or fourth seed, and now they could have been sixth or seventh seed as well. So I think Roger Goodell, the reason I felt strongly is because of Roger Goodell. I now believe that they may not get enough emphasis on it this year to get over the hurdle, but I think that you come back next year and it probably will happen, because generally speaking, Roger will convince these owners that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The league itself is going to benefit by making more money here, and that in turn will trickle down to benefit the owners. And it's not as if that fourth seed, like you just mentioned, like an AFC South team with a terrible record, it's not as if they're not going to make the playoffs. They're going to be in the playoffs. It's also not as if they're going to stop trying to play and win games, because the more games they win, the better the record's going to be. So there's still going to be a ton of these teams that are going to be competing all 17 games of the season. This is just going to further emphasize that you got to keep competing. You may not want to rest your players in Week 18.
Yeah, boy, so much of this conversation, Warren, has been predicated on rest and the value of it, right? The rest advantage or disadvantage, like you highlighted with the Lions and the Raiders, respectively. This is another way to take potential rest away, even for, you know, if a team's got the one seed all sewn up, obviously they can coast. But everyone else, you know, the Bills have, you know, this past year they were able to rest in Week 18. This potentially takes that away, and I don't know, man, Something about the league, adding games, so, you know, 17 games, we're gonna get to 18. Let's take rest away, potentially. I mean, everyone wins here, I think, except the players.
I agree, and I think that the players' union, in fact, would be the ones that would be the strongest opponents of something like this, because their players will be forced to play in some of these games where they otherwise might have, quote-unquote, earned a little bit of opportunity to rest.
Yeah.
So the league itself, from a revenue perspective, that's what's making this money. And from a fan watching the games, I do find it more interesting week 18 if more teams are playing for something as opposed to just sitting there watching a bunch of backups out on the field. So I understand that perspective as well, the league and the fans' perspective. From the players, though, absolutely, you want that opportunity to walk into the fact that you don't have to play one of your games.
Warren, thank you. Before you go, do you want to plug the book coming out, the website, anything having to do with Lord Reeves, Rich Rebar?
Yeah, he is outstanding. I'll tell you this. I'll do something. If you go to sharp.football and enter the code WGR for the book, instead of $35, it'll drop it to $1. I'll do a special discount here. So anybody who's interested, it's 500-plus pages previewing the upcoming season. You can get it for just $1. It'll come out in early July. That's when it publishes. You could pre-order it now if you use the code WGR.
Wow, Warren, great job. Thank you for that.
What a gift. Thank you. That's really, really generous of you.
On my way. Thanks for your time, as always, Warren.
You got it, guys. Thanks for having me.
Okay, Warren Sharp. Sharp.football/WGR, he said. Let's see, it's $35. This now this way it's $1. It's a savings of carry the two. $34. That's a great, that's like 90% off almost or more.
What can you even get
or
for
almost
a,
or more?
Can you even get for a buck anymore? A buck.
Not a lot.
Is a toll even a buck? I don't even know.
I think the Grand Island Bridge is $1.
Yeah.
Unless you live on the island, then it's like 8 cents.
Yeah.
Maybe a few more cents than that. It's better. It's a better deal if you live on the island.
Good. Well, that should be.
That
should be the case, yeah.
Yeah. Interesting insight from Warren on the schedule. Did you know that the Bills have not lost a game after the bye in 11 years? Longest active streak in that category. 803-0550 for your calls. We're talking about the tush-push thing again today a little bit already, and also this schedule stuff that's on the table for the owners here today and tomorrow. Sal Capaccio coming up at 5. This is Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.
To have an opportunity to be a champion is a big thing. And to get a gold medal and to represent your country. So the same reason why basketball players want to play, you can't come out and take an L for like the first decade if you created the sport. You know, you lose to Saudi Arabia or something like that in flag football, you know what I mean? You know, you got to dominate, and for that, you want to put out your best players and, you know, and stack up, you know, chips and, you know, the endorsement deals that have come for that, for representing your country. Yeah, I think it'd be enticing for a lot of young guys.
I'm listening. That is Bart Scott on the now or since passed proposal to have NFL players be eligible to play in the Olympics, flag football, new sport in 2028.
One per team, like one player from each team only eligible. I was listening on the way in, and I forgot the fellow's name now, but a reporter's done a lot of work on this. Says there, I guess, at least traditionally, I don't know if this will be the case for the Olympics, but 12 person teams is what we're talking about. Five on five, mm-hmm. one sub, each side of the ball.
So not it wouldn't be like Alec Anderson.
No, it's not.
Bills.
Yeah, no, it's not.
He can move.
Yeah, yes, he can. Not a super deep pool. It's a deep pool. There's going to be a lot of guys that are going to have the opportunity to take part, at least, you know, first time around here.
A maximum of one player per NFL team, mm-hmm. period, or a maximum of one player per NFL team per country?
That's a great question. I have not heard that specified. I've only heard NFL teams should only have to worry about one guy from their team going. But that might just be for Team USA. I don't know how that'll work for guys from other countries.
Like you have a parent from another country, some sort of other way in.
Yeah.
I might have a better chance of playing for Italy, say. Well, I'm okay here. Like, it shouldn't be yes, there can be an injury. There can be an injury a lot of ways, but this will free the players up to do it. I think it'll be fun to talk about how the team would be constructed. Right? I mean,
yeah, I'm not
who makes it.
I'm not anti-fun.
Who wants to go?
I want to be open. When you say it that way, it sounds like you're struggling to be open-minded. I like to think of myself as being an open-minded person, so I don't want to just shut this down. Like, I don't care about no flag football. I don't need it. I don't need a lot of this. I mean, but it's fun. So I want to keep an open mind about it, and I think it's reasonable to expect that players will be enticed by the opportunity to represent their country, take part in all of it, the opening ceremonies, the whole thing.
The village.
And, you know, the opportunity to win a gold medal. You know, you grow up, I don't know, everybody would have different experiences, but if you end up choosing football, you've almost always known there's no opportunity for international competition. It just isn't going to happen for you. Now, this isn't exactly the same, you know, it's not tackle football, but it is an opportunity to, you know, do your thing, showcase your skills on that stage and potentially come home with a gold medal. Like, I think that will be pretty enticing to guys.
The closest thing would be going to England to play Jacksonville. That's the closest right. You get to international competition. You're going to play Jacksonville, but it is an international site.
Yeah, whereas, you know, hockey players, baseball players, basketball players, you know, the teams, the North American team sports have had soccer all over the world. I mean, there's internet, soccer's almost mostly well-known for international competitions. Football's never had anything like that. So,
guys will want to do it.
Yeah, I think so.
In LA?
Yeah, I think guys are going to want to do it.
And so how do they get picked?
Yeah, that's a great question. But you're talking about so few guys, at least for Team USA.
12 players get chosen for the team and probably some alternates. And there's going to have to be like a practice season, maybe even like an exhibition season. Guys go on tour like the Olympic hockey team would, playing against Adam Krautwurst and his friends. I doubt that,
right.
Even though they're big into flag football over there. Just who chooses? Do you get like a Ron Wolf or somebody to put a flag football team together? Or would there be somebody from, if there is this, the world of flag football, who would be more like in tune with what kind of team you want?
The skill set and like what sort of players you want, what variety of skill sets you want to have on the field. Yeah, I wonder if it'll be like, you know, Team Canada, Team USA at Olympic time or for a Nations Cup. Like, here you go. Here's Andy Reid is the head coach of Team USA for the Olympics, you know, or, you know, Brett Veach is the GM, whatever. Will it be that way? Or, yeah, like you're saying, will someone more familiar with that version of football? All things we don't know yet, but I do feel pretty confident, pretty comfortable expecting guys to want to do it. The teams might be another matter. I did hear this same interview I was referring to with Brownie and Tasker on my way in. This guy quoted John Harbaugh already as saying, like, I've got a quarterback who maybe is made for this, but I'm not sure that that's what's best for the Baltimore Ravens, is if my quarterback is going to be the guy to go, you know, play this and expose themselves to injury.
Seems like it could be a logical choice. It's 3 years out. He might be old and slow by then. Maybe it's Jaden Daniels.
Right.
Maybe it's someone we don't know yet.
That was the next name I thought of.
Someone in the league. Maybe it's Justin Fields. Maybe it's a player who's sort of like washed out. But by 2028, teams are holding back their franchise quarterbacks. Here's a guy who, you know, like kind of like going to the CFL.
Right.
So you go to flag football.
Right.
Maybe there's a league by then. Maybe there is one now where you have sort of the growth of the game and ex-NFL players play in it. Other guys, you know, just sort of on the fringe jump to it. Lots of questions.
Yeah.
Maybe it's going to be like, you know, if this won't be how it is, but I just thought of it. Like how you, in the days where they had the Pro Bowl, the team that would lose the AFC Championship game, like, you know, Marv Levy in 1988 would coach the Pro Bowl. And the other team, Cincinnati in that case, would go to the Super Bowl. So the championship game losers were the Pro Bowl coaches. You know, maybe you win the Super Bowl, you get the right to coach the like flying football game. Team.
Yeah, yeah.
Sort of like that. In curling, you win, this is at least how they do it in Canada, you win the men's or women's nationals, the Breyer or the Scotties. You win the nationals, you are automatically the representative at the Worlds. You win the nationals, you represent Canada at the Worlds. Other countries do that differently. They have a, you know, some countries just vote on it. But there's that. So you win the Super Bowl, you win the MVP, you get first dibs.
Yeah, I wonder what, I would think this can't be anything but great for the world of flag football, which I don't know how expansive that is. Like you're suggesting, is that already on TV? Like if I surf through my Fubo stuff, am I going to find flag football somewhere? I might. I don't really know. I've never gone looking for it, so I don't know.
I know, but I haven't found it.
Right, but I would expect. Yeah, I think I want to say this. I think I want to say this. I would expect that this will elevate that to the point where some Saturday or Sunday here within, you know, between now and the Olympic Games, we're seeing these games on TV. Some league, like whatever the best league, you know, whoever can get the partnership with whomever, FS1 or ESPN or, you know, whatever, Tutton, going to get some flag football on and just get, you know, familiarized because there's going to be interest in it. People are going to want to get some idea, you know, if they're going to wait until whenever the Olympic Games happen to watch, you know, whomever, Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson play for Team USA in the Olympics. You might want to watch the sport a little beforehand, even though it's not those dudes playing.
The field is 70 yards long, not including the end zones. 70 yards.
70. I heard 50 earlier today, I thought.
But, okay. Right. I might be wrong. I believe it's 70, and you start at your 5. When you get possession, you start at your 5-yard line, and then you go from there. I don't know how eager I am to sort of bone up on flag football, but I'm going to like the idea of drafting a team, putting sort of a fantasy team together for the games. Dan is with us. Hello, Dan.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Hey, wouldn't this be the perfect time for the NFL to really start showing this in the Pro Bowl for the next 3 years?
Well, haven't they already done that? That's about the Pro Bowl is that now already. I think the last couple of years has been flag football round robin tournament or something, isn't it?
Yeah, but yeah, I guess you're right. I was thinking about making it more predominant, that like kind of like how the MLB does the winner type thing, make it more predominant, I guess, is what I was trying to say. But they do have the round robin, but this is the chance that maybe you could get more people aware of the sport before it hits the Olympics.
Maybe. I don't even know what they do at the Pro Bowl. It's the Pro Bowl skills games or something now, right? So there's more to it than just...
Yeah, there's a few days of it, but I know the final, the day that the game used to be is now flag football. And I don't know if it's a round robin or what, but there's flag... I know I've seen flag football being played there. So, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't... I'm suggesting that some TV partner, maybe even NBC, who carries the Olympics... would find their way to showcasing it, whatever they think they deem the highest level available is, and get it out there. I don't think the league is going to have guys playing more flag football. Like, they're going to be reluctant to have guys play flag football at all. I think teams anyway, owners, managers, coaches. So I don't know that you'll see players that you know from the NFL playing it before the Olympics, but I'm saying I think you'll see it on TV. You know, in the years between now and when those Olympic Games take place, it'll find its way on as a way to sort of like pad the entry, I think.
I will only consider it if there's a sky ref. That's what I like most about the sport. I want there to be just absolutely non-transparent officiating decisions made where we can then, you know, I'm only mostly kidding, argue about them at length after they happen. That's really, that's been the key to the NFL's success. And it's rarely acknowledged, but having Monday arguments about refs.
That's when you know you've arrived.
That's really when you've made it.
Yep.
Because you're always growing, even though people are complaining about officiating constantly. Sal, in 20 minutes on this, and the Bills' preseason schedule is out. We'll talk about the other items on the table at the owners' meetings, too. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog at 803-0550. This is WGR. A little bit of drama yesterday. It was my pleasure and honor to play in my late friend's Memorial Golf Tournament, Vern Jacobs. He was my son's first lacrosse coach. They've had a tournament, I think, 5 years now at Niagara Frontier. Looked forward to it very much. My first time playing. I always have to work, but took the day off. Great day. Loved it. I don't play a lot of golf anymore. Pretty much it goes like this every time. Wake up, get about ready to go out the door, and then grab my golf clubs on the way to the car. Oh, where are my shoes? That's pretty much what happens every time. I don't play enough to have like a set place in the house for golf shoes. Sometimes I'll put them right next to the bag. This time I know I didn't because there's work being done in the garage and I knew where the clubs were, but not the shoes. But like, no problem. I remember moving them to this one area and I'm looking and I don't see them. So I look all around the house now. It's like time to go. Don't prepare. Where are the golf shoes? And then it hit me. I played a month ago with Adam Krautwurst at Ridgemont and would have left the shoes in the car. Because whenever I play next, they'll already be in the, even if I can't find them, I'll get to the car, there they are.
Yeah.
That was my thinking.
I have almost always had a pair of golf shoes in my truck.
Okay. So, fine. I sort of come to the conclusion that that's where they must be. And then I realize my car is not with me.
Right.
My car is in for service and the tournament's in an hour. And so no golf shoes. Do I have time to buy them? Do I even want to buy them? What if I don't? Where am I left here? Can I play in sneakers? Is that even something you can do? So my mind is scrambling now. Like, can I go get the shoes out of the other car? Am I going to go to a store?
Is there a pro shop? Is there a pro shop at the course I'm going to?
These are all the questions. Before I get to any of those options, the pile of shoes where I would have put the golf shoes the first time has all kinds of shoes from the past. This is like winter boots. You leave them in this pile in the basement.
This is your life shoes.
I mean, I don't throw them out. So I've got shoes when I would cut the grass and they would turn green on the side. Like, they'd be in this pile. Just shoes through the years. And there is a pair of golf shoes in this pile. My feet are the same size.
Sure.
My size 12s, they go with me. Like, that's not an issue. Other parts of the body, sometimes you don't have that luxury.
More fluctuation, right?
And there are these white Nike golf shoes. I mean, vintage. I don't have anything new anyway, but the shoes I have that I would have worn are probably 20 years old. And these are the shoes that I replaced these other shoes with. So, or back, vice versa. I don't know. Probably the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Made it work.
Good for
you.
You
should have seen me out there. I mean, you never would have looked at me and thought, the guy's shoes aren't right.
Right.
He's got a shoe problem. It's more a swing problem, but maybe the shoes aren't the problem here.
Vintage shoes. Nice.
I got through just fine. So I was worried for a minute.
They didn't fall apart on you or anything?
No, not at all.
When I started playing again here recently, this is 4 years now, so first round of golf Owen ever went to play at a golf course. We went to Dandy Farms, and I had, similarly, a pair of Nike shoes from the 90s that had been my golf. I just didn't play a lot for a long time, and so they had stayed intact, and those were my golf shoes. I never thought there was a problem. Walking off the 18th green that day, first round of that year, we're going to take up golf. I'm going to play. You're going to learn the game. I'm going to re-engage. The sole fell off of one of those shoes. Like, complete, not even like, it wasn't like a thing where gradually through the day you notice like, oh, this is a problem. This is going to go. It literally, like, I stepped and the sole of the shoe stayed on the ground and I'm like, I think I need some new golf
last
shoes.
Last hole.
That's Can good. You believe that? Right?
What do you do if it's not?
I know, right? I'm out there in a golf cart in the middle of, you know, hole 12, and I would have had to stop playing.
Your shoe has no bottom.
I'd be playing barefoot. So thankfully it happened right. I took them off, put them in the trash can, and went on my way.
Could you play barefoot?
I suppose
you probably could,
but I don't know, man. I hurt my back last year going to the simulator in sneakers, thinking, because the first couple times I had gone to the first time I ever went to the simulator, I brought golf shoes with me, and the people I was meeting there were in just regular sneakers. And I kind of felt like, oh, this is not a thing. I'm not supposed to do this. So I started doing that. And last winter, my feet being so just a little less firmly planted on the ground tweaked something in my back, and I had like a month of chiropractor to get it straight. So I don't want to swing a golf club without the shoes on anymore, because I think I hurt myself, thankfully not that badly, doing that.
I might stay with these guys. I felt like there was a little bit of a fashion statement being made here because of the vintage, like an Air Jordan kind of
right
move here. I might stay with them. It went fine. Sal Capaccio on flag football in the Olympics and more after the update here on WGR.